Colonel Sam Adams was delighted to see Penrod again. He was walking with only a single stick now. "Sawbones tells me I'll be playing polo again by Christmas." Neither mentioned the long ride back from the battlefield of El Obeid. All that needed to be said on that subject had been said long ago, but Adams glanced admiringly at the bronze cross on Penrod's chest. Penrod composed a cipher telegraph to the intelligence officer with the vanguard of the Desert Column that was assembling at Wadi Halfa, 800 miles up the Nile. Adams's adjutant took it to the telegraphist on the ground floor and returned with the confirmation that it had been sent and received. Then Colonel Adams invited Penrod to lunch at Shepherd's Hotel. But Penrod begged a prior engagement. As soon as he had his travel papers, he left. A groom had his charger at the gate, and it was less than half an hour's ride along the riverbank to the Gajira Club. Lady Agatha was waiting for him on the ladies' veranda. She was just 20 and the youngest daughter of a duke. Viscount Wolseley, the commander-in-chief of the British Army in Egypt, was her godfather. She had an income of 20,000 a year. Added to this, she was blonde, petite and exquisite, but an enormous handful for any man. "I would rather have the French clap than Lady Agatha," Penrod had recently overheard a wag remark at the Shepherd's Bar, and had been undecided whether to laugh or call the fellow outside. In the end, he had bought him a drink. "You are late, Penrod." She was reclining in a cane chair and pouted as he came up the steps from the garden. He kissed her hand, then glanced at the clock over the garden entrance to the dining room. She saw the gesture. 10 minutes can be an eternity." "Duty, I'm afraid, my lovely. Queen and country." "How utterly boring. Get me a glass of champagne." Penrod looked up, and a waiter in a long white galabia and tasseled fez appeared as miraculously as a genie from the lamp. When the wine came, Agatha sipped it. "Grace Everington is getting married on Saturday," she said.
"A mite sudden?"
"No, actually, just in time, before it begins to show." "I hope she enjoyed the chase." "She tells me no, not at all. But her father is being beastly and says she must go through with it. Family honour. It's to be quiet and discreet, of course, but I have an invitation for you. You may escort me. It might be fun to watch her making an ass of herself and of him."
"I'm sorry to say it, but by then I shall be far away."
Agatha sat up straight. "Oh, God, no, not again. Not so soon." Penrod shrugged.
"I was given no choice."
"When are you leaving?"
"In 3 hours' time."
"Where are they sending you?"
"You know better than to ask."
"You can't go, Pen. The reception at the Austrian Embassy is tomorrow evening. I have a new dress." He shrugged again. "When will you come back?"
"That is blowing in the wind."
3 hours, she said, and stood up.
The movement attracted the gaze of every man on the veranda.
"Come," she commanded. "Lunch?" he asked. "I think not." Her family kept a permanent suite at Shepherd's, and Penrod rode beside her open gharry. As the door to the suite closed, she pounced on him like a kitten on a ball of wool, lithe, playful, and earnest all at once. He picked her up easily and carried her through to the bedroom. "Be quick," she ordered, "but not too quick. I am an officer of the Queen, and an order is an order." Later, she watched him as he dressed again, while she lay stretched full length, languid and replete, inviting his appraisal. "You won't find better than this, Penrod Ballantyne." She cupped her hands under her breasts. They were pale and large in comparison to her girlish waist. She squeezed out her nipples, and he paused to watch her.
"You see,
you do like it. When will you marry me?"
"Ah, may we apply ourselves to that question at some later date?"
"You are an utter beast." She combed her fingers through the mist and strawberry curls at the base of her belly. "Should I pluck myself here? The Arab girls do."
"Your information on that subject is probably more accurate than mine."
"I heard that you like Arab girls." "Sometimes you are amusing, Lady Agatha. At other times you are not. Sometimes you behave like a lady, and at others not at all." He slung his dolman over his shoulder and adjusted the chain as he turned to the door. She flew off the bed like a wounded leopard, and he only just had time to turn and defend himself. She went for his eyes with her sharp, pearly talons. But he seized her wrists. She tried to bite his face, small white teeth clicking together an inch from his nose. He bent her backwards, so she could not reach. She kneed at his groin, but he caught the blow on his thigh and turned her round. She was helpless in the circle of his arms, with her back to his chest. She pressed her firm, round buttocks into him, feeling him swelling and hardening, and gave a breathless but triumphant little laugh. She stopped struggling, sank to her knees, and lifted high the twin half-moons of her buttocks. She wriggled her thighs apart so that the nest of pink curls peeked out between them. "I hate you," she said. He dropped down behind her, still booted and spurred, his sabre belted at his side. He ripped open the front of his breeches, and she screamed involuntarily as he transfixed her. When he stood up again, she collapsed and lay panting at his feet. "How do you always know what I want you to do? How do you always know what to say, and when to say it? That terrible name you called me a moment ago was like chili powder on a sweet mango. It took my breath away. How do you know these things?" "Some might call it genius, but I am too modest to agree." She looked up at him. Her hair was tangled and her cheeks were flushed rosily. "Call me that again?" "No matter how richly you deserve it, once is enough for now." He went to the door. "When will you come back?" "Perhaps soon. Perhaps never."
"You beast! I hate you! I truly hate you!"
But he was gone.